Welcome to the Instinct Intervention. I'm so excited to share this material with you because it was one of the biggest changes in my life that made the most significant difference. And what I like about coming into right relationship with your instincts is that it's a very attainable shift in your life where the before and after picture can be tremendously transformed. So as a former engineer turned shamanic practitioner, I'm always looking for quality of life and what will make a life well lived and things going well. So the problem solving aspect, but also the efficiency. There are so many daily practices and opportunities and things that we can do. And I'm constantly wanting to find the things that for the least possible effort in move the dial in the most dramatic way. Because one of the things that we know from behavioral scientists about change is that sometimes our motivation is really high, and if that's true, we can do really hard things. But if we're living full lives, if you're wrangling children or working hard in your career or balancing the care of aging parents or just full in whatever way it is in life, your budget for making changes and transformations, the energy you have left over to commit is really, really finite. And so I want to work more in the area where, regardless of your motivation, we're looking for very high levels of attainability, which means it's very easy to do. And so within this program, there's a core practice that says, hey, if you're willing to put some mindfulness on this for the next 21 to 30 days and do a few exercises every day, you can change the baseline of the activation of your fight or flight system. So if you think back to the stereos that we used to have, there was that big volume dial where you could turn it up or down to make the music louder or softer. And this program is about taking control of that sort of volume dial on your fight or flight system and being able to quickly and efficiently turn it down so the instincts aren't as hyped and they aren't as loud, and to get their voices and their, you know, intensity and the tension they create at a more peaceful level in the background. And I would argue that our instincts just need adult supervision. We're in this weird paradox where it's really, for most humans on the planet, in a lot of ways, the most benevolent experience we've had in terms of, statistically speaking, our levels of safety and access to food, secure access to food. More percentage-wise, people are having that than ever before. And in those of us blessed to live in first world countries, there's even more access to safety. And I'm not making light of all the social justice changes that are needed and all the, you know, ways that humans are messy and harmful with each other, but compared to what human history tells us, we really have this golden era where there's a lot of opportunity to thrive. But conversely, we live in an environment that's created by that that's immensely different than what our instincts developed to give us an incredible ability to deal with. And so they're kind of freaked out. If you've ever moved a kitty cat from one environment to another, if you've moved houses, they spend a few days kind of being flat and crouching and hypervigilant and looking around while they decide that there's nothing in this new environment that's going to try to eat them. And unfortunately, if we don't pay attention to it as humans, we can end up walking through the world, you know, kind of with that sort of shoulders hunched, neck pulled in, head on swivel, trying to find the danger that our instincts are so certain is there. And the mind always believes the body. So there are many, many forms of stimulus. It can happen in the food we eat that creates stress state in the body. It can happen with loud noises. It can happen with near misses in traffic. It can happen with social tension and just dealing with not very emotionally intelligent people. It can deal with a deadline at work. And you may even be someone who kind of thrives on a little bit of stress and intensity. So the goal of this isn't to say you don't want to be engaged in life, and sometimes even with a little bit of chemistry going with it. So I'm a huge fan of full engagement and flow state, and we're not trying to get you to that zen, everything is really level. But what we are trying to get rid of is the fight or flight hammering away in the background against your health and your well-being and all of those kind of things, because we just have an environment that makes the instincts active. There are all these things that flip the switches, you know, even the light being different than what our ancestors had. And from there, the mind believes the body, so you get all these crazy thoughts. I like to think of the instincts creating tension in our body and giving us counsel that's like a really drunk friend who really loves us. So they're giving us terrible counsel, like, you know, conceal the plan so no one can thwart it, or the best way to get over a man is to get under a new man. And they're yelling this really bad counsel into our ears all the time. They will tell us to eat the highest caloric density food in the largest quantities we can get a hold of it. And intellectually, we know that binging on the donuts in the break room isn't such a good idea for our health, but our instincts will actually create tension in our bodies if we're in stress state and we're not eating the food in the break room. And even if you go and have a donut, it'll soothe everything for a little while, but if they're still free and available donuts, potentially that, you know, activation will rise again. So there's all this crazy stress that's going on, and then the mind believes the body. So the mind is taken away from all the creativity and resourcefulness and engagement and cool things that we could do to create our life experience into scanning for threats. What's going to hurt me? What's a problem? Where's the danger? And when it can't find any, finding habitual grooves in the brain of fretting about things. So money, health, relationship, children, we find these things, and the brain kind of is using this magnificent supercomputer to even run scenarios. It decides what terrible thing could happen to us, and then it strategizes how to work through it. And as someone who's done a lot of that, I really like to have sort of an internal mantra that says, you know, I'm investing in future me being in a good place. I'm doing mindfulness, I'm doing, you know, health, I'm making responsible financial choices, and I'm cultivating a self-trust that future me, who actually knows the difficult scenario, whether it's my parents reaching the end of their life or a financial setback or a, you know, change in the industry that affects how I might do my business, that future self is resourceful and she'll figure out all the things with the actual data points. And I have a lot of evidence looking back of my capacity for that. And even if you feel like your capacity for that isn't great, you can treat it with growth mindset and say, well, it's a learnable skill. I think I'll work on cultivating that skill. And that's so much more powerful than kind of the default rumination. They actually found this really interesting thing doing brain scans, where scientists were looking at, like, oh, what part of the brain lights up with this association or that association? And one of the things that they started to notice was the resting state of the brain in between engaging in some way, in between whatever stimulus of the music or the picture or the image or the sensation that they were delivering to the people to see how their brain responded. And what they found is this rumination cycle where we tend to fret and stress about the past, feel shame or angst or distress, or, you know, ruminate on what's already happened, or fears of the future, where there are these really specific parts of our brain that light up. And things like meditation and movement are really good for counteracting that. We get into this different state. And I believe our hunter-gatherer ancestors just didn't do as much rumination. Most of the time they were in an open, alert, aware, walking around the world, finding things that were helpful, avoiding hazards, and really present in the moment. And then they had this ability, you know, as they drifted off to sleep at night or in the middle of, you know, grinding the acorns or whatever, to just have some time where their mind wandered and they could run scenarios. They'd find friction points with the world and come up with a more elegant solution. And there's a really nice balance to that. But the modern person can fret and fret and fret. And then we get these neurological pathways that have our brain defaulting to stress state. And so a lot of times people try to correct their negative self-critical thinking with something like cognitive behavioral therapy or affirmations. And I would argue that the problem is happening at the biological and physiological level of adrenaline and cortisol and the other stress hormones being released into their system. And they're so acclimated to it, they don't even notice it's a problem until it gets heart poundingly acute, until it becomes really, really, really stressful. And then they diffuse it by some circular thinking on some, you know, pain points that get recapitulated over and over again. And getting the baseline of the fight or flight dropped as a really specific goal, like the resting heart rate, you want that to be low. We get our heart rate up when we exercise, but we're healthier if our resting heart rate is a little bit slower. There's a range. And likewise, we want our resting fight or flight system, the resting amount of where we are with that, to be much lower than it is for most people, much calmer. There's a difference of stress state, which is meant to be super temporary, but a lot of us live there, and thrive state. And in thrive state, our body digests our food properly and builds the immune system and you know, detoxes things and builds healthy bones and, you know, cleanses our blood and does all these cool things. But stress state turns off the immune system, the digestive system, all of these really important functions. And so that background stress will hammer away on your health in the background. It'll make your mind loud and kind of a bad neighborhood with all these unpleasant thoughts. And for all of my psychically engaged, energetically sensitive people, the instincts will co-opt your psychic abilities and have you using them to scan for threats. And there's this sort of hypervigilance that takes over, and it will mess with your ability to perceive the energetic information of the world and other people accurately. So it's a suppressant for the effective and powerful use of your psychic gifts, meanwhile overstimulating that area because we're tuning in to find all of the threats. Now, most of us come by this honestly because using your psychic abilities as a child, particularly a sensitive child, to read the reactivity of the adults around you and kind of how activated their stress state is before you interact with them is actually a really good survival strategy. It's really, really good to know when to avoid dad or tread really lightly around him and when he's available to meet, you know, really good quality needs and to engage in a positive way. And so while I totally honor the safety needs that were met and how well this way of using your psychic gifts to scan for threats may have served you, in our adult lives, we have this freedom of movement so we can avoid emotionally unregulated people, unless it's your two-year-old child, but you know, you have a lot more recourse with that, that little being, you know, you're accountable for them, but you have different choices to use. But if you're dealing with other adults, there are a lot of strategies where we can step away from someone who isn't treating us in a way that works for us, who's really out of bounds with that. And that's a whole complicated discussion, but we have this ability to enjoy much greater physical safety without needing to slip into hypervigilance or walking on eggshells or some of these strategies that are ultimately self-defeating because, you know, I know I'm the most socially awkward when I'm off my center, when I don't feel safe, when I'm really wanting to please and connect with someone and I'm anxious about it. I'm going to be way more weird than I would be if I was calm and centered. So these strategies ultimately spin a lot of energy but don't work as effectively. So at the core of this program is an intervention to calm the fight or flight response so that your baseline is set to a lower level. And as you go through life, you may need to tend it during acute times of stress. So the idea is that we do this more focused work. We learn a lot about it, and we do this focused work over 21 days to a month. And then we end up with an instinct activation baseline that is a lot lower, that just it's resting, like our resting heart rate, our resting instinct activation is lower at the end of this time. And then we have ways of tending it and keeping it there that take even less time, that are super efficient, that when it starts to creep up, we've developed the awareness and the focus to notice, and we have the box of tools to situationally address it if it spins out. So, you know, if you have someone who you love in the hospital, that's always going to be a journey where there's more activation. But again, you can bleed off the really acute so that you can drive safely to the hospital. There's an ability to drop your baseline, which is going to give you a lot more stamina for hanging out in the hospital and being effective for everybody who's going through the experience. You yourself will also probably spend a lot less time in the hospital as a result of how incredibly helpful this is for your health. So there are a lot of things that we need to do really regularly, like, you know, exercise and ideally eating some vegetables and things like that. But this is something where you can change your overall health by shifting the fight or flight. And then as it stays down, again, you know, there may be other strategies like, you know, looking for a job that maybe doesn't have a bipolar boss, for example, if that's something that, you know, you grew up with a parent who is bipolar. So it's not one-stop shopping, but all things being equal, without another issue in your life in some way, you have this ability to make a change that will allow you to enjoy considerably better health. And I love that. I really want that for all of us. There's a happier, easier mental, emotional, better physical health, and better access to your psychic gifts and your energetic sensitivity. And so there's so much that is really magnificent. And this program will teach you really good stress management, for sure. You'll learn really good tools for that. But my vision for this is to make a fundamental shift in your relationship with this system so that you set your baseline lower. When it does spike up, you notice and you're able to tend it, and you have really effective tools where you've sort of built the muscle to calm it down effectively. I remember some people I worked with early as an intern talking about one of them being a ballet dancer, and because of the control of the body and the diaphragm, she could interrupt hiccups instantly. And it wasn't really a learnable skill for her, you know, office mate who, you know, was afflicted with hiccups. But it's kind of a cool thing where you're like, oh, there goes my fight or flight, drop it down. All right, now I'll go back to whatever I was up to. And that's the very learnable skill set that I want to offer to you. And I also want to offer you a lot of context for what these instincts are doing, because I think most people don't understand the role of their instincts beyond the sweaty palms or pounding heart or acting weird or not sleeping, like the physiological responses and the tension in your body you may be aware of, but you may not be aware of how insidiously this affects your thinking and your worldview and a whole bunch of other things. And I find that when you know what that drunk friend of your instincts voice is saying, that is wanting so desperately to save your life, desperately wanting to help you and save you and keep you alive, but so outdated for the world. You know, the counsel is, you know, is really outdated. One of my most beloved favorite clients is someone whose family came over from Vietnam, and there were all these spirit guides in ancestors that had gone before, so aunties and uncles and grandparents who had passed on, who all wanted to counsel her in how to be successful as a, you know, as a Vietnamese girl from, you know, the 40s or the 50s. And she's a modern American woman. And their counsel, while sweet and incredibly well-meaning, was really misguided for what she's balancing and navigating in her life as a modern woman living in LA and running her own business and all of those kind of things. And so the instincts, again, their counsel is really well-meaning, but it's massively outdated. And it's never going to get us into Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is to have self-actualization or meaningful connection or a sense of purpose. Like, it can't help us. You know, it doesn't, instincts don't care about happiness. They care about survival. And the truth is, the vast majority of what we need to thrive in the world at Maslow's pyramid of needs at the base level, safety, security, food, shelter, we're going to be wildly more successful with if our instincts calm down so we can get into our executive brain and use it discerningly to navigate the world. And so across the board, from the most fundamental needs, like if we talk to each of your chakras in turn about all the things that they desire and want and that would, you know, really make them thrive, their outcomes are all going to be improved through this one very attainable shift of dropping the baseline of the instincts. So more safety, security, more creativity, more balanced emotionality, more skillfulness in navigating the world where your boundaries will be respected and what's okay with you, more loving heart connection, easier access to dynamic communication, your psychic abilities, looking for quality of life and soul purpose and opportunities and the joy of the world rather than scanning for threats, and your soul will be able to be more expressed. And we're not vilifying the instincts, and we're not saying that they have to go away. They walk with us, but if they get the right kind of adult supervision, they're not going to derail all your other experiences. And providing your instincts with the right level of adult supervision doesn't have to take up so much of your time and have so much of your energy with this program and with this system. So, former engineer, I'm all about systems and efficiency and really a what works perspective. I'm not going to say this is that there aren't layers to this. I'm going to give you a lot of material. You can go through the material at your leisure, but I really want to encourage you, whether you do it now or at a later time, to have that focused time where you work every day on your instincts for a measurable amount of time to get that baseline drop, so that you're not doing it as a response. Oh no, I'm really, really stressed. I'll do a little bit of practices till it feels normal, but proactively, because you have the most ability to calm your instincts from a relatively calm place. So you'll get a lot more benefit if day in and day out, at a time when you have some space to focus on this, you're basically rewiring your system. You'll get neuroplasticity, you know, it'll change so much about your biology for the better. So I'm so glad that you're joining me, and I'm so excited to support you in this endeavor. So thank you for listening. As you probably know, my name is Katie Weatherup, and my website is handsoverheart.com.